just the competitive nature in the agency space is, and again, I'll share an example of this, is having a true care for not just the, you know, helping the individual, but also helping that industry to forward itself. There's a there's an agency called Phaser Marketing run by this guy by the name of Luke, and I'm going to butcher his last name, so I won't say it, but definitely check out Phaser Marketing. And what they've done, which is really interesting, is that they have a very clear point of view about why they're in business. They're in business because they want to help the home services, the blue collar industry. They want to help them progress. They care about the future of that vertical.
Welcome everyone to another fantastic podcast session here at High Level. We call this the Spotlight Sessions. Different formats, by the way. You can see this on the YouTube channel. We have Spotify, iTunes as well, where it's really like a podcast. But either way, I'm so excited to bring Corey Quinn to you. Corey is someone that I recently met, and I've heard a lot about him from several people in the community, especially our founders as well. Corey has over 25 years of business experience. He's a sales leader, marketing executive, and some of the most in-house recent house rules were Scorpion. I don't know if you've heard of the really big agency Scorpion. He was the CMO for them, while the SMB focus agency grew from almost 20 million to almost 150 million in recurring revenue under, I think, 6-7 years, which is pretty crazy. And now he's on a mission to really help fellow entrepreneurs and agency owners. And I think he even said, I want to get to 1,000 people and help these people out as much as we can. So I said, Corey, let's get on a quick podcast and let's talk about a couple of things. And first of all, can you add to that bio the big story?
Sure.
Who are you? Help us understand your journey a little bit.
Thank you, Paulson. Thank you so much for the opportunity to, to help me on my mission to help agency owners, what I call escape founder-led sales. And I'll give you an example of sort of my journey in the agency space. I've been in sort of the agency space over 15 years. The first agency I worked at, I was in business development. I was in sales, going and closing deals for an agency that was an enterprise level agency selling PPC and SEO to big brands like Lululemon and Remax and the Men's Warehouse. And the that agency was founded and sort of run by a CEO who was a Harvard Business School executive. And so the way that we grew that agency by and large was leveraging his network. He had a direct line to all these CEOs and CMOs of these big brands that we can go in and do business with. The next agency I worked at was a company called Science, and they're an incubator based in Santa Monica. Their claim to fame is that they incubated a company called Dollar Shave Club, which was ultimately sold for $1 billion. My role there was they had started an internal agency, then made it external. My role was to help grow that. And during my time there, we just leveraged the CEO, the founder of that agency was the ex-CEO of MySpace. And so he had this fantastic network. He's very charismatic. He'd go out and basically bring all these deals in. And by this point, I had been in the agency space for about 8 or 9 years and came to just believe that that's how agencies grew. You had a charismatic founder that was very well connected, and they bring in all these deals, and the sales team would go and close the deals. That's how I thought the business was run. Until I was recruited to go work at a company called Scorpion. And Scorpion, what I found was a company that at the time had a very deep specialization in serving attorneys, personal injury attorneys mostly, but also criminal defense. And what I found was an 8-person sales team that was very well compensated. They made a lot of money. They drove nice cars. They didn't work very hard. And the reason why they were in that envious position was because they had really built a name for themselves as an expert in legal marketing. And what I found was that you'd have companies calling in, attorneys calling in, and the sales team would take that phone call and do something that's called a one-call close. On that very first phone call, they'd close them, they'd hang up the phone, stand up, and there was this big metallic gong in the middle of the sales floor, and they'd hit the gong, and there'd be high fives all around, right? And so what I learned in this experience, and we built on this obviously, but the core of it is that these attorneys who hired Scorpion to run their digital marketing didn't know who the founder was. They didn't care who the founder was. What they actually cared about was working with a specialist who understood the nuances of helping attorneys to grow their practice. And that began a whole process where we came in. I helped the company along with a lot of really great people to not only really deepen our client list and attorneys, but we also expanded to home services, the franchise vertical, medical as well. And it was through this process that we were able to grow the business profitably to $150 million, which is, you know, a much different company than the one that I arrived at. What's interesting is that when I got there, the sales team was 8 people. By the time I left in 2022, the sales team was a 100-person sales team. The number of employees when I started was 100 employees. When I left, it was 1,000 employees. And when from a client perspective, I started there as 1,000 clients. I left when it was 14,000 clients. So massive growth. I'll tell you that I was not this gray when I got there. It was a great ride, lots of highs, lots of lows, everything in between.
Absolutely. So if you're watching this and you're maybe pretty new in the journey, watching this YouTube channel or this podcast, Scorpion is one of the largest marketing brands that was, I would say, almost ever built in the agency space. It was, if you're a marketer, you kind of knew Scorpion, especially in the 2000s, even in the 90s, they were really big. And, you know, talking to the CMO is not something everybody gets to do. So I appreciate you jumping in on this and kind of sharing your story. Sure. So Corey, we had met, I think a couple of weeks ago to kind of plan out this episode a little bit. Yeah. And we had this common denominator of like, well, Paulson, let's talk about agencies escaping the founder-led sales, right? Can you share a little bit about that? And maybe we can talk about 3 pillars around that conversation.
Absolutely. So in many cases, there are agency owners that are they're doing the sales. The company is reliant on the CEO to go out and get the deals, whether they're that charismatic CEO from who used to work at like a MySpace, or they're just great networkers where they're involved in the local BNI, or they're part of Vistage or EO or one of these things. And what's wonderful about that is that's a great place to start. And some agencies, frankly, that's all they need. Like they're comfortable sort of running an agency where that's the dynamic. The challenge with that, however, is it's really hard to scale the founder's time, right? If you're 100% dependent on the founder, it's really hard to scale up that business. The other downside is that you end up taking whatever comes in the door because because of a lack of a specialization, you're sort of what I would consider to be kind of a generalist. And the challenge, of course, with having a lot of different types of clients is that it's just very hard to create repeatable processes and operationalize and productize the growth of the agency. And so many agencies in this space, I talk to a lot of founders almost every day where they're frustrated by their inability to really get out of that situation. They've tried maybe hiring a third party cold calling company, or they've tried hiring a sales team and have really been challenged by this concept of founder-led growth. And so one of the areas that I'm super passionate about is really helping them to unlock the growth of their agency by escaping founder-led sales.
Absolutely. And I'm guilty of this myself. I built 3 agencies and I was that charismatic founder in the front.
Yeah.
And then all the account managers and fulfillment folks all hated me by the time Friday came along because like, holy crap, Paulson sold another random custom package that nobody.
Exactly. Yeah. The team has to learn yet another client and yet another industry on a one-off basis. And it creates all this context switching and this, all the meetings have to be synchronous. So you know what I'm talking about.
So let's talk about pillar one, right? Pillar one to me, I guess we can say, choosing a vertical market to focus on, going from generals to the specialist. help us unpack that first pillar in, you know, really escaping that founder-led sales.
Sure, absolutely. So while I'm a big believer in an agency that's just getting starting out, to do that sort of that generalist approach, say yes to a lot of different businesses, because part of the process of growing an agency is really figuring out what are the core competencies that's unique to us, our brand, our resources, our people, like what are we really good at? And then also who are we really good at serving? And so while sort of niching down or focusing on a vertical is important, there's also value in just saying yes a lot, right? So you can get that data, you can get those reps and really get more clarity on what you're good at. At a certain point though, that begins to work against you, as we've been talking about. And so what I'm a big fan of is using the client data to really guide this conversation around like which vertical market do we have a lot of success in? I take my clients and I have workshops around helping people to really leverage the client data to understand signal in there to figure out, okay, if we've got 11 different verticals, which one do we want to work with? And we look at things like the client, the agency's revenue and their ability to retain those clients. We also look at some of the softer things, some of the qualitative aspects, like who does the founder like? You know, which vertical are they particularly passionate about? Or do we have a familial connection within that vertical? Like, who do we really like and want to serve and help? Who do our client success team, our account managers, who do they like working with? By the way, typically they like working with people who get great results, right? The happy clients, right? So who are we getting a lot of good results for? And then we also want to look into the market to understand, if we're going to target, let's say, hospital systems, well, how big of a market is that to really focus the agency in on? Because the tricky part, the psychological kind of game here is that by focusing your agency on a vertical, you're saying no to a lot of other business. And so if you're going to do that, logically, you're going to need to make sure that it's a substantial market to go after to make it worthwhile to focus and start saying no to other opportunities.
Yeah. So Corey, what you're saying is if you're starting out watching this and you're a brand new entrepreneur, a brand new agency owner, maybe even freelancer, like it's okay to dabble and get your feet wet on multiple industries and kind of understand who you are, what you like. But that's eventually you're going to have some kind of a focus. And a lot of times that focus goes towards results-based driven marketing and what you provide to the market. And then in addition to that, it allows you to have freedom to not depend on just the founders themselves, because now you can go specialize in a certain vertical, specializing other, you know, individuals or even brands that are even partnered up in that space as well. Can you share a little bit more about when someone should go after that vertical, you know, that the narrow lane versus how long should they stay in that generalist mode?
Yeah. So I think it's what's interesting about it, it's a great question. I think the when an agency owner has tried everything that they can think of to continue being a generalist and it still doesn't work, that's usually when they're ready to talk to me, because I'm not in a position to convince them that's the right thing. They already know it's the right thing, right? It's in some respects that it is a way to grow an agency, to get scale and you know, a lot of freedoms that come with that. And so it's only until the founder and their teams have, kind of come
exhausted.
To the
they've exhausted.
They've come to the ego death of like, okay, we did whatever we're doing now, so we have to like do something else. And what's important is I don't see my role as convincing them to do this. Like they have to be ready to do that. And so I think in most situations, most of the people I talk to who are ready have tried everything else and they've not really been able to see the result they're looking for.
Right. And I get this question often as well of like, when should I niche down? When should I narrow down?
Yeah.
Quite often, if you are at a point where you're like drowning in fulfillment and your team is drowning in so many variability in fulfillment,
it's
usually a good time to reconsider, especially after those 9 p.m. phone calls from the VIP clients, right? They're like, hey, fix this, fix that. What happened here? Give me three more reportings that you don't even need. Like,
when
you get to those trenches, you'll start seeing, I would say, the culture within the team and also your energy as the salesman will kind of deteriorate, right? Can you talk about the second pillar that we had discussed, which is success requires empathy, right?
Yeah.
And it's there's a lot of emotional intelligence there, a lot of different things that we should all consider in going after that kind of a system without.
Yeah. And I'm going to do my best to articulate this. I'm really still trying to find the right words, but I'll use an example. So in the world of the agency space, there are, depends on who you ask, anywhere from 45,000 to over 100,000 agencies in the US today. And the secret's not out about, you know, verticalizing or taking a niche approach. So when you are in an agency that's focused in on, let's say, plumbers or, you know, the home services vertical, that doesn't necessarily differentiate you completely. Like there's still going to be competitors in the space who are also saying, well, we work with plumbers too, right? So that's not like a pure differentiator positioning tactic. It helps. It reduces sort of the number of competitors because there's a lot of generalists out there. But what I've found be really compelling as it relates to helping to break through sort of the noise and the just the competitive nature in the agency space is, and again, I'll share an example of this, is having a true care for not just the, you know, helping the individual, but also helping that industry to forward itself. There's an agency called Phaser Marketing run by this guy by the name of Luke, and I'm going to butcher his last name, so I won't say it, but definitely check out Phaser Marketing. And what they've done, which is really interesting, is that they have a very clear point of view about why they're in business. They're in business because they want to help the home services, the blue collar industry. They want to help them progress. They care about the future of that vertical. Yes, they're marketers, but they believe they play a role in helping to raise the visibility and the viability of a career in the trades, right? Today, you know, it's not the most glamorous, it's not seen as the most glamorous job. And the reality, it's actually a really wonderful industry to work for, but there's this negative connotation. So they're a big part of who they are is pushing forward this positive sort of the benefits of being a blue collar worker in the trades. And one of the ways that they do that is they have a foundation and they have a nonprofit that they've started in that regard. They also give high school graduates who are going into the trades, they have a scholarship for them, right? And so they really care about helping to spread that word. And so as a result of that, if you are they focus on construction. So if you're a construction company and you're looking at two different agencies, the one that really cares about the future of my industry is going to stand out differently, right? And I think that has to come through in a very genuine way. It can't be manufactured. So one of the things that comes into this idea of verticalizing is, well, what industry do I really want to, do I care about? What industry do I want to be a part of the future of? And I have a podcast called the Vertical Go-to-Market Podcast. And I interview all of these agency owners who've taken this vertical approach. And in every single case, there is some level of emotional care about not just the business that they're running and the clients they serve, but also the industry that they're focused on.
1,000%. And I think if you ask me what's been the success of High Level in the last 5 years, it's simple.
Yeah.
We care. Mm. It's not the features. I mean, you know this. Like, I mean, our CEO will jump on a Zoom call for 2 hours with a brand new trial that is not even paying us because he just simply cares about the industry, the agency owners. Now we're seeing course creators come along. We're seeing other, you know, avatars come along just from the emotionality of how we do business.
Yes.
And I think that's a lot. That's a huge component because the agency space in itself is desensitized. I'm just going to get rid of a client or get a new client. I don't really care. It's almost like a cash cow business. And that trust most small business owners have to the agency is terribly broken.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So this is a great point that you're making of the emotionality, the empathy behind. Can you expand further on this a little bit more?
Sure.
How do the team members respond to a business brand like that?
Well, I'll give you just another example came in my mind. I just published actually an episode with Zanya Wyans. She is
from the dental space. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. And so what's interesting about her is that she's not just an agency owner. She is, she was just in, I think, Chicago or somewhere, literally like yesterday, because I emailed her that she was getting an award from the dental industry about her contributions, right? And she's an example. She's got other things that she's doing. She writes articles for the dental publications and so on and so forth. But you know, they've been at it for a while. But the point is that she's a great example of someone who is not just, like you said, lip service, kind of seeing the dental market of like, wow, there's this big addressable market. We're going to try and squeeze as much revenue as we can out of this thing. She's actually truly, you know, invested in the future growth of these dental businesses that, you know, in reality is that they weren't trained to be marketers. And so the way that she's able to differentiate herself is by all this evidence that she is truly an expert, a specialist in that vertical.
Yeah. 1000%. And it's insane. Like, I mean, that's what's missing in business today is the emotional empathy behind who you are and what you're doing to the customer. I mean, it's not rocket science, but it's such a blind spot for massive businesses.
Just one more, just to build on that. When I'm working with clients, what I find in some cases, most cases, they're looking at a vertical market that they're saying, okay, this is pretty interesting. Let's say like restoration or, you know, mold control, whatever it's called. And they're looking at it and saying, well, you know, there's a lot of businesses and there's a lot of ad spend. And so I think I'm going to target this. I don't really care about that industry, but you know, the numbers are good. And the reality is, as I coach them to think twice about making a decision based on the numbers alone, because if you're committing to the restoration industry, let's say, that means you're going to their conferences. You're going to be writing their, you know, content with them. You're going to be spending a lot of time with these people. And so if you're repelled by these people for whatever extent, whatever that means, you know, if you don't see yourself really caring about them, I would pause and try to find instead a vertical that you do have a connection with or that you could see yourself really getting involved in.
Yeah. And I mean, I can speak to this even further firsthand experience. I mean, like the first agency I had was in the dental space and I came from the healthcare space. So I was your, you know, white collar, black suit jacket and, you know, very clean cut look. And I got so involved with the dental space. It got to a point where agencies would cold outreach to me because they would assume I was a dentist.
That's great.
Right. And that's how close I got. And then the second agency I had, Corey, was in the automotive space. So if you walked in with a suit into a mechanic shop, they're going to look at you crazy. And funny thing is, I struggled so hard with the blue collar industry because I didn't belong in a shop with this, you know, white jacket. So I ended up getting a different business partner that became the face of that agency where I kind of took the seat back and it worked. Right. So like, to speak to your point is like, you have to belong in that industry if you're going to go after it.
Yeah. Genuinely.
Some way, shape, or form. Genuinely.
Yeah.
But that, I think that's a missed point quite a bit. So what should we do about all this, right? Like, how do we get this message out? What is effective marketing, effective outbound look like? Maybe that's the third pillar that we can talk about.
Yeah, absolutely. So once you've identified a vertical and you've really gotten clear that there's a lot of potential for care and interest, and there's a good market opportunity for your agency to really, you know, build to the size that you're interested in. One of the ways that you can short circuit sales, because we all know that only 5% of an industry or a vertical or any market is actively buying in any quarter. There's been data about this and research and so on and so forth. And so if you are an agency, one out of 45,000, or maybe you're a specialist in dentist as an example, there's still quite a few competitors in that space. So yeah, you're sharing that 5% of the market amongst a lot of other agencies. And so, and the other reality is that most dentists, they don't just go to Google to find an agency. They talk to their network and so on and so forth. So waiting on inbounds is not a not a strategic way to grow your agency, which is why I'm a big fan of leveraging outbound. Today, sort of the default outbound motion is you hire a third party agency to, you know, find a list of people, and you kind of do this spam your TAM approach where you throw a bunch of stuff at the wall using best practices and templates and all this stuff, sequences. But we all know, if you've done that enough times, that vast majority of the time, it doesn't work out as expected. And so I like to do something else that I've seen work very well at my time at Scorpion and elsewhere, which is an idea called gift marketing. Okay, and I'll give you an example from my time at Scorpion. So we were prospecting into personal injury attorneys.
Right.
Okay. And most personal injury attorneys have something that's called a gatekeeper. And that person is the one who's answering the phone and making sure that no one from Scorpion gets to the actual access to the attorney. Like, they're screening out all the vendors. That's it. And trust me, they're busy. So while we tried cold calling a bit, what we found was that it was very low sort of ROI activity. So what we would do is we would send the office a tin of extremely high quality cookies, not just some random run of the mill sawdust cookies. These were amazing gourmet cookies that would be overnighted, FedEx into the law firm, addressed to the attorney. What we found was that the cookies would bypass the gatekeeper or arrive on the desk of the attorney. They'd open it up, and that those cookies would end up in the break room, and all of the people in the law firm would be asking who brought the amazing cookies. And of course, in this case, the name Scorpion was, like, you know, everyone was buzzing about this experience. The next time the salesperson called from Scorpion, they would get a completely different experience. It would go from, you know, originally a full of resistance to, you're from Scorpion, you're the ones that sent the cookies, hold on, let me put you through, type of thing. And we did this, and we found a lot of success, and we've sent millions and millions of dollars of cookies to attorneys. And if you've been in the space of the attorney space, you probably heard about us doing that. But we extended this beyond just cookies. We did a lot of other things and a lot of other verticals as well. And the whole point of this is, number one, this is a quote from one of my friends and sales mentors. He's a sales coach. He says, if you like donuts, as an example, and you just depend on inbounds, you're getting whatever comes in, cookies and candy bars. But when you like donuts, you can go out and get donuts by doing outbound. And so it all starts with the list building. I'm a big proponent of building a list in-house and owning that list, and then going outbound with these high value, unique, interesting gifts as a first touch, not as a follow-up to a meeting, but as a first touch in a sequence of outreach to these high value prospects.
1000%. And I did something similar with nothing bun cakes. I don't know.
Okay. Perfect. Yes. Cakes. Oh yeah, absolutely.
So bun cakes were about $19, and you get, I think, 12 or 16. And I would drop these off in dental offices all over Houston. Perfect. And link follow up with them and close like 10 clients every other month. And it was, it was insane. Cause like everybody else is doing GMAS, massive cold emailing and everything. Right. I'm like, dude, I'm just going to show my face and follow up. Let me just see what happens.
This is brilliant. It's, what's funny is that dentists, they love sweets, which is, I've always found,
which is so funny. So what I didn't know that actually until I learned the industry well enough, and I'm realizing, man, they have the equipment to clean their teeth better than a toothbrush. So they're like, whatever, we'll just destroy our teeth. Yeah, no problem. But I think the key there is to learn the small little quirkiness of that vertical, right? Some people, you'll find out they love events. Like, if dentists loved events, they would go to all the conferences, masterminds, because it's a lonely journey. Like, dentists, usually they're not in the same pocket as physicians. And they're not in the same pocket of entrepreneurs and marketers. So, like, they had their own distinct, quirkiness, I would say. But every vertical has that. They have their
own. That's exactly right. But the thing is, as a generalist, you aren't able to see the nuances and the details because you're too busy running around trying to, put out fires or whatever it is. That's one of the major benefits. And and not to mention just the word of mouth. Like once you've built up a lot of stable of happy clients in dentistry, what begins to happen is, you know, the word of mouth spreads within that culture.
So let me ask you a couple of questions here, Corey. At what point do you align with your scaling strategy versus your launch strategy, right? The scaling, that's a whole different ballgame. Is it paid ads? Is it partnerships? Mm-hmm. What does the future look like on a system like this?
Yeah. So the way I think about it is three legs on a sort of the marketing approach, the go-to-market. Number one is inbound. The way I think about inbound is maybe a little different than what HubSpot would call it, but it is making sure that your brand message and offer is visible anytime someone in your target vertical is shopping for a partner or an agency. So that can include everything from paid search, paid social, more sort of bottom of the funnel things, to content marketing, you know, launching a podcast.
So air cover, solving, essentially.
Air cover, exactly. All of it. A lot of it is top of funnel stuff, but it's being findable when they're searching to either for a solution to the problem or they're actively, you know, buying. So that's inbound to me. The second one is outbound, which is all about building lists internally, not shipping that out to some third party who doesn't have the same incentives you do. You have to build the list internally, doing the outbound with the gifts. And that's to help to build up, you know, sort of through muscle and brute force, just building up your client list through that channel. And then the third one is what I call relationship-based marketing. The reality is it's all relationship-based marketing, but specifically when you're targeting a vertical market, you are doing things like joining the vertical associations, you're contributing content to them, you're going to the conferences, you're speaking on their stages, you're finding in that industry, in the dental industry, there are thought leaders and there are people who, what I call, are mavens, right? These people who, in fact, it was Gladwell who coined the term mavens, but these are people who everyone else looks to make decisions. So you strategically go out and you build direct relationships with them. Like I said, you go to their conferences and you have experiences with these people. That's how you really become sort of a true specialist and expert in the eyes of that market. It's through those relationships that are built over the months and years.
Yeah, absolutely. So as we kind of close out this podcast, I've got a few more things that I want to just, you know, walk through just real quick. Corey, what are your thoughts before we forget on the whole high-level SaaSpreneurship, the whole SaaS model, if you're familiar with it, and versus the agency model? Like, what are your thoughts? Is there a place for both? Is it better to go one route versus the other? Is it, you know, an add-on? Like, what are your thoughts on the whole SaaS world in general with the high-level in mind?
So what I think is really interesting, my understanding of the story of the business is, kind of aligns with my approach. If I was going to start a SaaS business, I would start a service business first, serving a specific audience, and then over time building software to replace repeatable sort of non-human driven actions, right? Which is where you start. And it, as a service business, it's all service. It's all, you know, it's all busy work, but eventually you build software. And so based on that, that's my general understanding of how you guys started, was really kind of creating software to help automate and systematize a lot of things that an agency would do, right?
Right, correct.
And I think that's a very powerful way to build a high value and eventually high margin business, right? But you have to start in the service first.
Yeah, I think that's interesting because if you have a presence in the service side, it's so much easier to launch the SaaS versus going cold into a market just launching SaaS without a reputation. So
yeah, I would build on that. You know, the number one, I should say the number one cost of running a SaaS is acquisition, client acquisition, right? One of the ways you can mitigate that, especially in terms of a marketing agency, the cost per acquisition is lower. And once you have them in as a client, you don't have to sell them as, you know, as a new sale to, you know, get them on your software. It's always an upsell, right? It's a horizontal sale.
It is.
And as a result of that, it's much easier to scale.
Absolutely. So Corey, we talked about agency owners being able to escape that founder-led sales. We shared three pillars. One is choosing the vertical market focus. Second is having the empathy and the emotionality behind the messaging and the brand positioning. And third is really thinking through the effective outbound.
Correct.
Lens. Now, before I forget, Corey, I know you're working on a book. Can you share a little bit about your book and maybe other programs or something you might have wanted to share?
Sure. So today, my focus is working one-on-one with agencies who want to go from a generalist to a specialist and kind of embody this. I take them through five steps, and I'm now just finalizing my book that is the five steps that I take my high-end, high-ticket clients through. So anyone who is an agency owner who wants to, you know, go down this road and become a specialist, they'll have the tools and the steps available to them. The book is called Anyone, Not Everyone. And it's all about how to focus your business, differentiate your message, and escape founder-led sales. So that book is going to be available in early Q1, let's say mid-Q1 to be safe. Yeah, and I'm excited to launch that.
Awesome, Corey. I appreciate it. I'm looking forward to reading it. And I'm sure our crowd, our high-level family will appreciate it as well. Yeah. Ladies and gentlemen, Corey Quinn, we appreciate you jumping in. And if any of you are watching and don't even have a high-level account, we're very friendly people, family-oriented people that are very collaborative. Jump into the community. We have a 14-day trial or a 30-day trial. You may want to find it somewhere. But I appreciate you all listening to another episode of the Highlight Spotlight Sessions. Take care.
Thank you so much for the opportunity.
All right. Take care. Bye-bye.